This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Are then recounted for the next choice candidate until the winner achieves a majority among remaining candidates. With single transferable voting, voters have the power to rank candidates by choice rather than simply choosing a single candidate. For more information about single transferable voting, also known as instant runoff voting, visit fairvote.org and get that ballot in the mail to meet the November 15th deadline. KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity.
Stand by.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Belinsky.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
And tonight's program, we're going to be talking an awful lot about World AIDS Day, both here in Houston and JD's Queer Music Heritage. In the second hour, is going to be covering that topic also. And also, we will have This Way Out, which is the international news program for the gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered community. First of all, I want to remind you that if you haven't paid your pledge yet, we would certainly appreciate you doing that. And you should be getting something in the mail. And you know the routine here, because you do hear it a lot here on KPFT. So we're going to go right into that, and first of all, I'm going to bring on Dalton DeHart, who sort of helped organize this community a little bit around. I mean, we've been doing World AIDS Day in this community a lot, but it was like we finally really wanted to work together and make sure that we got the publicity out about all the different events that is going on and sort of bring it all together. Is that right, Dalton?
Yes. Several months ago, we convened, I think, about 35 different people in the beginning to talk about World AIDS Day and trying to see if we could get events lined up, not only that day, World AIDS Day, but Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, in order to make people aware of the dilemma that we're in, because people think that HIV/AIDS is a disease of the past, and of course it isn't. So the group got together and we started talking about World AIDS Day, since it's around the world, but we wanted to make Houston aware of World AIDS Day and bring back the red ribbon. Actually, Jane Wiener was the one who first came up with the idea, who is the artistic director of Hope Stone, the local theater and dance group, and Dominic Walsh was involved in that, so they began that, and I think on the third year, I believe, I joined in. This is the sixth one, and of course, Matt, who will be talking here in a minute, also has been the chair of the Illuminations Project. But we got together about, like I say, about 35 different ones, all the different groups in Houston, representing every segment of the community, from the people in ERESIS, ICOH, and AIDS Foundation Houston, just a wide, wide range.
And this also goes beyond just the GLBT community.
Oh, definitely. Yes, it does. It involves, of course, the Hobby Center is very strongly involved. We try to get all of the theater groups involved in this, and we invited people there, representatives from the mayor's office, and the city council people are aware of this. So what we're hoping to do is, of course, to bring back the red ribbon, which has sort of been lost in the process, because now people see it representing other causes. But we have hundreds of red ribbons, and people are beginning to wear them at different events, and we've got BCBC and Bunnies and all the other groups involved as well. So Montrose Counseling Center, as I said, AIDS Foundation Houston, Legacy, and the different ones. So we've got a huge group of people involved in getting this put together, and we're going to have a number of events to commemorate those that we've lost over the last several decades. And of course, the culmination will be the Illumination Project. That'll be the major function from this group of people, and it's a very poignant presentation. If people have been there before, they know it. We have the dance groups. We have people reading. We've had a reading from the Matt Shepard Larrabee Project. We've had the dancing and the singing and the voice choir and things of that nature. And then at the end of that, and Matt will talk more about this, but We have a candle lighting vigil where people go up on stage and light a candle in memory of someone they've lost. And then after that presentation, then later on we're going to go to Meteor and have sort of a social to commemorate all the people that have been involved in this and just have a very nice evening. And we'll talk some more about that, but I'll let the others
Well,
talk.
And I guess the history goes back to that was sort of the arts community that really sort of brought this together.
It was, because, as you know,
both here in Houston and around the world.
And especially in Los Angeles, New York, because so many of the artistic people died of AIDS. And so as a result of that, they all began to band together and put this in force. And then we just built upon that and now have quite a AIDS Foundation. Houston was deeply involved in early on. Now, if people will go to the new website that Brian Labinka so graciously put together, worldaidsdayhouston.org, they'll see an incredible listing of things going on, not only in Houston, but in all over the state and area, so they can find out a lot more going on there. But we've tried to involve as many people and as many organizations as we possibly could, and I think we've been pretty successful in doing that. So it'll be a great memory refresher for days gone by when things were not medically treated as well as they are today. Today people think that AIDS is a manageable disease, and to some extent it is, but it's still a very horrifying experience for everybody who goes through that. So we want people to be aware that we're here, and we want them to know that we have a compassion for them and for their lives and for their very beings, and that we love them and want to commemorate them. And if they have any questions, they can go to the website, and I think they'll all be answered.
Well, let's talk about some of the particular events. Want to introduce yourself and tell us what you're working on.
Sure. Matt Harrison. I chair the Illumination Project, which Don spoke about a little bit. And it's December 1st at Zilker Hall at 8 p.m. And it is a performance to remember. On World AIDS Day, we do it every December 1st or half for the last, this is our six year, and it was started with Dominic Walsh and Jane Wiener in Diverse Works, and we were there for 3 years and moved over to Zilker Hall, and I've been there for 3 years, and what's really unique about the performance is that everyone donates their time and talents and energies, and the Hobby Center is just fantastic and give us the theater. The technical crew at the Hobby Center donates their time, which is just a blessing.
That's almost unheard of, too, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, it is. That you're not overstating it by saying that. Continental Airlines brings all the performers in for us. We've got people coming in from New York, the House of Ninja. Those boys are coming in, which we're excited about. We had three last year, and we have six this year. The Bang Group, David Parker and his partner are going to be in performing. So it's a great night of art. We also have, you know, local artists as well. And a little dance, a little spoken word, some music. And, you know, it's one time a year, December 1st, World AIDS Day. And it's something I think, if you haven't seen it, I encourage you to come out and see it at least once, because it's such a poignant evening, and it's moving. And if you've been affected by HIV AIDS, I think it's something that you can come and really give a release and a bit of catharsis, and really see some great performance and be grateful for what people are doing to keep AIDS in, you know, it's not going away. And so people are still saying, hey, we're here, we're performing, and we're remembering. And that's, to me, is sort of what World AIDS Day is about.
And how are tickets available?
Tickets are available through the Hobby Center. You can, there's a couple websites that you go to for tickets. WorldAidsDayHouston.org is one where you can find that information. IlluminationProject.org is another place you can find that information. And then also the Hobby Center's website, which I believe is thehobbycenter.org. You can also find that information or call the Hobby Center at 713-315-2525.
Okay. And Brian, you got involved in this. We talked about this a bit last week.
Yes, sir. Hi, I'm Brian Levinka. I'm kind of the marketing guy for World AIDS Day. I put together the website, and the website was designed to be kind of a one-stop shop for all events and everything that's related to this weekend. And actually, this has been kind of an education process for me because World AIDS Day was just more of a day to me in the past, and kind of when Dalton called me and asked me to kind of get involved, I really educated myself, and it really is a community-wide organization where a lot of different organizations are working together to kind of promote this. And the thing is that the visibility of World AIDS Day in Houston is not very high. You know, you don't really hear about it. You never see red ribbons anymore. And that's kind of our point and our goal is to make it more visible, wear red ribbons, attend an event, just kind of remember the day. And the way that I'm trying to do that is through the website and WorldAIDSDayHouston.org. There's 29 events this weekend alone for World AIDS Day. So attend an event. Go look at the website. There's information on everything. We have flyers around town. We've distributed red ribbon, thousands of red ribbons, from what I understand, at coffee shops and all over the place. So that's what we're kind of, the focus of our committee is to bring the visibility back to this event. And I can't say enough about Dalton and Jane with Hopestone. I mean, they've really been the push behind this, and they've motivated me to get more involved and kind of make this a bigger event in Houston. I mean, Houston has a very large gay lesbian community, and we don't have the representation in World AIDS Day. So that's what our committee is about. So wear red ribbon, remember, attend an event.
Well, I guess what's unique about this year is the fact that it's on Saturday, December 1st, but so that sort of gives us also Friday as another day for a lot of events to happen. I mean, besides the fact that you want to move it beyond just one day.
Yes, and, you know, our community, the gays, love parties and events and being social, so boys and girls get out, be social, remember the day. There's plenty of events to go to.
Okay.
And my name is Tim Martinez, also known as Timmy. I joined the committee actually at the invitation of a friend who told me I needed to get involved. I have some time on my hands these days, and I was kind of described as the kiosk that was getting all the information sent into me, and then I was pushing it to Brian to get the website going.
He's the central focus point of all the kind of all the meat behind the website comes from Tim.
Yeah. And I got involved because I have the red iPod, you know, and I have the red Gap shirt. And while I knew that that was happening on an international scale, I kept thinking, what are we doing locally? And about the time that I was having these thoughts was when Alan called me and said, hey, you need to get involved in this group. You know, you have some talent. Get, you know, see what you can do. And as we were pulling this information together, you made a good point. You know, it falls on a Saturday, but we actually have 3 days. We have Friday, Saturday. There's even some stuff going on Sunday. And what I've been telling people is, like, you know, some of these events are free. And if you can't take the time out of one of the 3 days to either go to one of the events or take a moment to remember people who have passed away from AIDS or honor those who are fighting it, come on. You have, what, that 72 hours.
Well, you know, I think what's really interesting is that, you know, when this started happening and the real activism started of ACT UP and Queer Nation, a number of those people, unfortunately, either are no longer with us, but a lot of the other people are now involved in more of the, and I don't mean this as a negative way, the mainstream organizations or right. The organizations like, you know, like the AIDS Foundation Houston or Legacy or Montrose Counseling Center are now very much involved in it. But we sort of lost that activism, and partly because it's become more manageable, but, you know, we're still missing that, I think, in a sense.
I agree with you. And hopefully by all of us banding together and making people aware of it, like, we've given Brian, you know, this information. He's done a great job with the website. Thank you. Out to WorldAIDSDayHouston.org, and there's something out there that you can do.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of the events are actually free.
Most of them are, yes.
And if not free, they're reasonably priced, definitely. And they're educational, but they're also really sort of help you remember what, you know, what went, you know, what happened or what's going on.
That's correct.
To sort of tag on what you're saying, one of the interesting things to me is the uncomfortability that still surrounds HIV and AIDS in the society. And I think it's easier for people just to kind of put it to the side and act like it's not there. And the fact that it is there and it's not going away. And the numbers are probably increasing rather than decreasing, even though it has become more manageable.
Well, and I think also the fact that so many people are dealing with either not having insurance or having insurance and being worried about, you know, there's probably a tougher process of coming out being HIV than an issue of coming out being gay or lesbian.
Sure.
And there's a lot of apathy in our community, especially with the younger members of the community. I think HIV/AIDS is more seen as a kind of a livable disease. There's not as much deaths that the younger generation sees, and so it's kind of glossed over. And we must remember that HIV is a virus. It can adapt to the drugs, and we could see a whole another round of deaths, you know, at any time. You know, it's just a matter, you know, and personally, I think it's a matter of time before it evolves, the virus mutates, and I don't want to see that day. And so that's why we're here tonight talking about World AIDS Day.
Okay. I'd like to bring Sally on and talk about the event that's happening at the Montrose Counseling Center, which is a candlelight vigil.
Yes, I'm the only female in the room.
Represent.
Well, that's not entirely true.
Oh, girls.
Hey, now.
No, I do want to talk a little bit about Montrose Counseling Center and what we're doing, the candlelight observation. This is our third year doing it. But I also wanted to point out that through this website we've been talking about, worldaidsdayhouston.org, I'm sorry.
WorldAIDSDayHouston.org. Please go there. Sorry.
But if you have a World AIDS Day event that we haven't captured in the list of things that we've got going on, let Brian know. He's got an email link right on the website. Let him know about the activities that are planned so that we can add to the list. And as we move forward through the years, that we can bring everybody together year after year. And Brian also is the distributor of the posters. We have postcards that we can distribute, and we can you know, get them to wherever you are. So contact Brian through the website.
Yeah, there's a link that says contact us on the website, and that's directly linked to my home email address. So don't email me right now, but if you have an event, just click on that link and I'll get it, and it'll be up instantaneously.
Right, and we can provide you with more information where to find out, you know, if you want to have it at, you know, your bar or coffee house or someplace like that. So that's a good thing. But I did want to talk just briefly about we're having a candlelight observance on Friday, which is November 30th. It's at Montrose Counseling Center at our new location, 401 Brannard Street. And it starts at 6:30, and it starts to get dark this time of year right around then. And we just want to invite the community to come out and light a candle and come and remember somebody that you may have lost to this horrible disease, or, you know, think about the people that you know who are struggling with it. And also, if you want to put together, you know, send a message of hope. You know, that flame that we light is representational of, you know, the hope that we have. And even though at the end of the night we're going to blow out our candles, that doesn't mean that this hope that we have is going to be extinguished either. That's going to carry on. And it's really a powerful, powerful event. We also have at the Counseling Center a paper chain of remembrance. And it's like the paper chain you used to create when you were a kid and put it on the Christmas tree. Well, we've got one that we'll put in our lobby. And we have people that decorate the links in the chain, people who are struggling with the disease. We've had people put messages of hope together. Some people will make, you know, a link dedicated to somebody that they've lost. And every year we just add more links to that chain. And so we'll have some more links for people to fill out and decorate at our candlelight observance on the 30th.
I thought I saw somewhere that the Names Project is also part of this too, which is also a way to remember people.
There's also a viewing of quilts. I mean, there's so many different events that are just kind of all-encompassing different things. If something might appeal to you, there's just different things. Check out the website, worldaidsdayhouston.org.
Okay. I guess, you know, we should probably highlight some of the other events that are happening that we don't have representation here from tonight. But, like, for example, the AIDS Foundation Houston is having has their luncheon, and that's happening on Saturday, I believe.
No, it's Friday, 11:30, and it has the famous Carson Kressley from Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. He'll be there, and it's a fabulous event. It's at the Corinthian downtown. It's a fantastic old bank that's been turned into an event space. And while we're on the subject of AIDS Foundation Houston, Julie Eberle, if you're out there, she put together 40 billboards across town for World AIDS Day Houston. 40 billboards by this weekend. And Julie, you rock. I think that's just awesome. And they're all over the city, so that's kind of helping us to be visible, too. But, you know...
Yes, thanks to Julie and Walgreens. That's fantastic.
Yes,
so
corporate sponsor Walgreens.
Be looking for those.
Yes.
Yeah, there's also going to be Tree of Remembrances. There's going to be one at the community center, and then also one at Thomas Street. And those are ongoing events that people can attend.
Right. There are a few ongoing events that are happening, I guess, throughout the month, besides the events that are happening on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You know, it's really great to have this all in one location to know what's going on. Has there been much mainstream media pickup of this event, or do we know of yet?
We have had some. We had some in the Zest this weekend.
Oh, great.
There's some coming out in the Houston Press this edition. We're doing an interview tomorrow with KUHF.
And some of the neighborhood sections in the Houston Chronicle have picked up our press release also.
In the Chronicle. Yeah. In the Commons section, it's great.
Right.
Fabulous.
So not much, but,
you know,
well,
we're starting. This is year one of many years.
Right,
somewhere.
Right, exactly.
But that said, the World AIDS Day has been around for 19 years.
19 years. Next year's the 20-year anniversary.
Right. So
we're going to blow it out.
Yeah, so after this year, you know, when we can all come together next year and everybody will say, oh, yeah, I remember worldaidsdayhouston.org, that group of people. And so, you know, we're just creating the foundation this year.
Well, you know, and I've only seen a little bit of this in the background, but, you know, sometimes it's said that we don't all get along here in Houston, but I think this was really an incredible collaboration of everybody really trying to work together and doing as best you can not to have events. I mean, with so many events, they're going to overlap, but there was really sort of trying to make as much work as possible.
I totally credit Dalton DeHart for doing this, his connections and being in the community.
He's shaking his head, but it's true.
Arm twisting a little bit, too.
Well, and he got everyone together, and I just think we need to recognize Dalton for putting this together. And I think, you know, thank you, Dalton. I think it's
yes,
awesome.
Yes, as someone was there at that first coffee, we sort of pitched this idea to Dalton, and he said, don't worry about it, just tell me when the meeting is. And we said, okay. And we showed up to the meeting, and it was standing room only.
And when Dalton called, I said, oh, I'll be there.
I did, too.
Thank you, Dalton.
Thank you.
Well, and you know, we're going to do a little plug for Dalton here, too, because a week from Thursday, there's going to be a special event, a celebration of Dalton DeHart, past, present, and future. And it's a benefit for the Montrose Counseling Center, the building fund. And it's going to be a fabulous night because we're going to finally really get to look at all those pictures in one place.
And
I mean, they're all up on his web, I know, on his website, but actually come in and look at it and be able to make some comments and talk about it, because every time you see Dalton, there's usually a camera attached to him.
Yes, and I think Dalton goes underappreciated in the community. We always kind of expect him to be at events, but he is amazingly everywhere at once, it seems like. I have this joke that I think that there's clones of Dalton walking around, and there's multiple Daltons, but he's chronicling the history of our community, and to see all the pictures throughout the last three decades.
Well, and one of the things that at Montrose Counseling Center at the event, you can come and see some of those photos, because we'll have albums from the past, and trying to bring it back to World AIDS Day, let's think about how many people we've lost in this community.
It's very,
you
very
know,
sad.
People that I know, you know, who were instrumental in founding a lot of our organizations, who are no longer with us, and we can see their pictures again, and we can remember what it was like back then.
Well, there's a whole segment of the population, an age group that is missing. If you ever noticed, that's just not there, and it's amazing. And that's what motivates me, is because, you know, of all the people that we've lost, and people that are still affected by that. So,
well, and as you were saying earlier about this horrible disease, you know, we're talking about a lot of young people who aren't, you know, they think that it's manageable, but, you know, in this age when we have things like Viagra and crystal meth and, you know, all of that, that coming, you know, intersecting, this is going to, you know, become another, you know, humongous crisis in the gay community. I don't want to forget those who aren't in the community, but it is going to come back. And then we're going to have, you know, all those stigmas, the stigma of being HIV positive, the stigma of being a drug user, the stigma of being gay, you know, all of those things come together. And you know, we want to make sure that those people know that we're still here. We still care.
Yes. Well, that virus, if it mutates, will be a super virus resistant to drugs as we know them. So, you know, it's a recipe for disaster.
Well, and we originally had hoped that there'd be a cure by this time. And that just didn't happen.
We were close. They had a vaccine that was pretty long on the stages of testing, and unfortunately that didn't work out as well.
Well, and Matt was talking as we were walking into the studio tonight about this new study in Washington, D.C., where they said that 1 in 4 residents of our nation's capital are HIV positive.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
1 in 4. I mean, that's startling.
Do we have the numbers for Houston?
I don't know what they are off the top of my head.
I don't think it's that high, but it's still...
Oh, no, I don't think it is. But
it's still a large number of our population is affected.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody that came by tonight to talk about this. The events are going on now, especially Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And as we've been saying, the best place to get this information is to go to worldsaidsdayhouston.org. I really want to thank everybody for putting this all together and getting this information out, because this is really something that we all really are very appreciative of.
Well, thank you, Jack, and Queer Voices, and the community for tuning in and being active and doing something for World AIDS Day. Wear a red ribbon, go to an event. Just remember.
And in the second hour, J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage is going to have a special on World AIDS Day. But now we go to This Way Out from our sister station in Los Angeles. You're listening to Queer Voices.
We've made huge progress, I think, in the last 40 years, in the last 140 years. I don't believe that actually telling ourselves over and over again we're not getting anywhere is going to produce more activism. I think it's going to produce despair. And I don't think there's any reason to despair. I mean, I think we've actually had a tremendous amount of success so far that we can be hugely proud of.
You are fabulous, each and every one.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Our news wrap crew took the week off to enjoy the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday, but they'll be back next time with the latest developments in or affecting our global LGBT communities, including a full report on this week's overwhelming electoral defeat of homophobic Prime Minister John Howard in Australia. On this special program, our Brian Goebel sits down with award-winning American playwright, screenwriter, and activist Tony Kushner in New York City for a wide-ranging conversation about creativity and queer politics.
Greetings, prophets! The great work begins! The messenger has arrived!
Tony Kushner's masterpiece, Angels in America, a gay fantasia on national themes, thrust him onto the international stage in the early 90s as one of the major playwrights of his generation. The seven-hour epic in two parts is a politically and emotionally fused portrait of gay life in the 80s under Ronald Reagan. It won Kushner a Pulitzer Prize and was made into a film directed by Mike Nichols in 2003.
If people like you didn't have President Reagan to demonize, where would you be?
If he didn't have people like me to demonize, where would he be? Upper right-hand square on the Hollywood Squares.
I'm not your enemy, Lewis.
Kushner had already been established as a theater director and a playwright before Angels. Its success was something that initially surprised him, as he explained to Charlie Rose in his first live television appearance.
It's long, as you say. It's about gay people. It's about AIDS. It's very political. There are a lot of words in it. And it just didn't seem like the kind of thing that producers would find a viable risk for investment.
In the years since Angels, Kushner has written a number of important works for the stage and most recently for film. His critically acclaimed 2001 play, Homebody Kabul, explored the historic, troubled relationship between Afghanistan and the West. Because of its proximity to 9/11, many critics and journalists described it as eerily prescient.
In Afghanistan today, I would be shrouded entirely in a burqa. I should be subject to hijab. I should live in terror of the Sharia hudud, or more probably dead, unregenerate chatterer that I am.
After Homebody Kabul, Kushner wrote a semi-autobiographical libretto about a Jewish boy's relationship with the family's African-American maid in Louisiana, where the playwright grew up.
Nothing ever happened underground in Louisiana, 'cause there ain't no underground in Louisiana. There is only underwater.
Hunch, 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 hunch.
Set at the time of the Civil Rights Movement and the JFK assassination, Caroline or Change tackles Jewish and black relations, history, poverty, divorce, domestic violence, and many other subjects in a time of change.
JFK.
Beat the Russians,
save the day,
stop the Jew haters and their bomb,
stop their nuclear pogrom.
Caroline or Change was nominated for 6 Tonys in 2004. Kushner's most recent work was as screenwriter for the Steven Spielberg-directed film Munich about Israel's secret response to the killings of 11 Israeli athletes at the 1972 Olympics. It earned Kushner and co-writer Eric Roth an Oscar nomination.
We want to ask you, will you undertake a mission?
An important mission. You will have to leave the country and your family, maybe for years.
And it is dangerous.
You can't talk about it to anyone, not even your wife.
While Kushner is one of the greatest living American playwrights, calling him just a playwright would not really describe him. He is a public intellectual, activist, Jew, gay man, essayist, and on. His appearances across the country usually draw large, diverse crowds. His strong belief in the effectiveness of activism and the possibility of progress makes him a voice for many marginalized communities, as Robert Vorlicky points out in his book, Conversations with Tony Kushner. Vorlicky writes that Kushner occupies a kind of poet laureate position, and the complexity of his personae manifests a kind of counter-celebrity status, one that resists his falling into the demands of a predictable, singularly defined public personality. Theater scholar James Fisher writes that Kushner's true persona is that of a political writer, and his activism is firmly tied to his art. It was politics I wanted to discuss when I visited Kushner at his tiny Manhattan office. First, I wanted to get his take on where we stand in the struggle for gay and lesbian rights at this particular time in history.
All of the polls indicate that homophobia is the banner of people over the age of 40 on the right, but that even people who identify themselves as Republicans and even people who identify themselves as evangelicals, when you get to the 18 to 39 year old demographic, those numbers drop off precipitously. Even among the Christian right, the younger generations are not as freaked out about homosexuality or, you know, same-sex marriage, gays in the military, as their fathers and mothers are. And among the sort of libertarian Christian, libertarian Republican groups, it becomes almost negligible. I mean, there's, I think, a strong amount of evidence that among younger conservatives, there's a real feeling that the Reagan-era coalition between theocrats and libertarians is nonsense, and that the Republican Party has embarrassed itself, and that it has to return to the sort of Barry Goldwater conservatism, or invent something new, but that making common cause with the fundamentalists is has brought them to disaster. So I think that there's reason to be hopeful because of what the polls show, and also just experientially. I mean, I believe that homophobia as the last sort of socially acceptable form of bigotry is really kind of dying out. I mean, it seems to me that way anyway. I think that there's it's getting harder and harder and harder for people to proudly announce their hatred of gay people in public places. The response is becoming more and more universally opprobrious. So I think that people who, 8 or 9 or 10 years ago could have made a homophobic remark in an interview and gotten away with it are now, having to sort of be careful and watch what they say, which is a good thing. I mean, I think that's genuine progress. So, that's not to say that we don't have an enormous fight ahead of us. I mean, we've made huge progress, I think, in the last 40 years, in the last 140 years. But I think that we're not... it would be a mistake to say that we're just sort of, in the same place that we've always been. I think that it's really essential for any political movement to try and be specific and accurate in its assessment of what the struggles ahead are and not become rhetorical. I don't believe that actually telling ourselves over and over again we're not getting anywhere is going to produce more activism. I think it's going to produce despair, and I don't think there's any reason to despair. I mean, I think we've actually had a tremendous amount of success so far that we can be hugely proud of.
Do you think gay marriage is an issue that the gay movement is too focused on, or do you think it's an issue that is central to what's going on right now, or is there too much focus on it? Are there other issues that the gay movement should be pushing?
I don't know. I mean, I sort of feel like, in a way, when something becomes a big sort of aspect of a liberation struggle, it's in a way kind of silly to criticize it and just sort of go with it. I mean, if that's what the general consensus of the community is, and this really became that in a very organic way. It's not like somebody engineered gay marriage as an issue. It sort of developed organically through the struggle, and so I think that, let's go with it, and it'll die out of its own if it does die out, at the point at which something else takes its place, or when we've succeeded and we can actually become married like everybody else. I think that, for a liberation struggle that's all about relationships and sexuality, it makes a great deal of sense that one of the barricades would be the places where government intrudes on affectional and sensual preference. And so Lawrence versus Kansas got rid of sodomy laws. To a great extent, you can pretty much have sex with somebody who's of your own choosing, as long as they're of a legal age of consent and so on, anywhere in the United States without fear of prosecution. So to one degree, we've taken care of that. The struggle against discrimination in housing and in the workplace is an ongoing thing, and there's a very interesting thing going on right now, of course, with ENDA, and that's another discussion. The big, huge issue, and I think it's a very good issue, because I think it's unlike gays in the military, which I think spoke to only a very small portion of our community. The right to get married and to be treated equally under the law, as is promised to all citizens of the United States under the 14th Amendment, it's fundamental. If we can win that, if we can win recognition as what they call a suspect class, under entitled to protection under the 14th Amendment, I think we've won everything then.
The world only spins forward. We will be citizens. The time has come.
Kushner has written about many issues that have historically divided us. I asked him about divisions in the LGBT community.
The only division in the gay community, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community that really disturbs me is that every presidential election, I think for the last three or four, 25% of the community votes Republican, which seems to me to be just an act of sheer insanity and self-hatred and suicide. I don't mean self-hatred. I don't want to say that because, I don't know. I don't understand it. As far as I'm concerned, without any exaggeration, without any hyperbole, the Republican Party is the official party of homophobia. It's been in their platform, in every presidential election since they bothered to mention it, I think since 92. They're still, you know, outrageously homophobic in every way, shape, or form. You can have fantasies that you're all being sort of good Ayn Randian, you know, libertarians, but the Republican Party, you know, hates you, and nothing that the Log Cabin Republicans have done has changed that. When 25% of our community votes for the Republicans, and we sort of helped Bush beat Kerry in the last election, and it's, you know, it's disgusting. And it also bothers me as a Jew that 25% of Jews vote for Republicans. I think it's incredibly admirable that in the African American community only 10% do, and I think the number ideally should be much smaller than that for our community, because, you know, this is a party that is openly contemptuous and destructive of all of our dreams and ambitions. Other than that, you know, no community is actually a single monolithic entity. Communities are formed by individuals and by distinct groups of distinct individuals, and they gather collectively to achieve interests that are common to apparently a great enough number of them to form a community, to form an identity. But that identity isn't meant to suggest some kind of uniformity. And of course, in our community, you know, we've gone through many, many divisions of gay. I remember, because I'm 51 years old, a time when lesbians and gay men simply couldn't work together, and separatism was just a given. And then that died, as I understand it, you know, largely around the time of the beginning of the AIDS crisis, when the lesbian community really joined forces with us. Even though sometimes I think we didn't deserve it, because it recognized a terrible human need and recognized a great injustice that was being committed against people who, like them, were had same-sex preferences, so we made common cause then. We've basically stayed together to a large extent since then. There's tremendous racism in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community, as there is in America, you know, all the way around. It's as disgusting in our community as it is anywhere else.
I am not a racist.
Oh, come on.
So maybe I am a racist.
I really hate that. It's no fun picking on you, Lewis. You're so guilty. It's like throwing darts at a glob of Jell-O. There are no satisfying hits, just quivering. The darts just plop in and vanish.
We'll have more with the playwright and activist Tony Kushner after this brief message.
It's that time of year again when many of you in the U.S. consider ways to maximize your annual charitable tax deductions. Unlike many other worthwhile causes, we can't survive without your help. Log on to thiswayout.org to get some unique musical, cultural, and historical programming from the This Way Out archives as our thanks for your support, and further reduce your U.S. tax liability. Better us than the government of George W. Bush, right? No matter where you are in the world, we can't go on without you. Log on to thiswayout.org to help keep this program on the air. From the This Way Out family to you and yours, thank you and happy holidays.
Welcome back to our spotlight on Tony Kushner. I'm Brian Goble. Kushner is currently working on two screenplays, but he has said that most playwrights don't write as well after they've written screenplays, that they develop less as playwrights. I asked him what he's finding.
For most people, unless you're somebody of just, you know, astonishing abilities, most of us have to work really hard to get good at something. And we hopefully manage to use our time reasonably well. We don't have a lot of time between, you know, sort of attaining adulthood and senescence, is only a few decades. And hopefully you'll use those few decades well to get really good at something. But anything that's worth doing is hard to do. And I think that it seems to me, at any rate, that learning how to write a really good play is a lifetime's work. And, you know, to do something well is great, but to do something better after that and to keep improving would seem to me to be the goal of the thing. You don't want to just have done it well once. You really would like to be, you know, to have a career in a way like O'Neill's, where he, you know, got better and better and better and better until he wrote his greatest play and the greatest play any American ever wrote at the end of his life. I would like to believe that at the end of my life I'll be able to say, well, I kept trying to figure out how to write plays and get better at them. And screenwriting is just a very different form, so you're sort of splitting your focus. I mean, I think the reason that very few playwrights can write good screenplays is that the two things have very little to do with one another. I mean, I don't think a play and a screenplay I think they're radically dissimilar. So, you know, there's always a temptation the minute you have a successful play, Hollywood comes knocking at your door, and the money that Hollywood pays is infinitely greater than the money you're going to make unless you write a hit musical, which for most of us is like not going to happen. So I don't know. I mean, it's nervous making. I mean, I wrote the screenplay for Angels in America, and then I wrote the screenplay for Munich, and now I'm writing one for Abraham Lincoln, also for Spielberg, and there's another one that I had promised a while ago that I want to finish for Scott Rudin, about Eugene O'Neill, and then I'd like to sort of like not do it for a while, and that's going to take a certain kind of strength of character, because, you know, theater is just unfortunately a difficult place to make a living in these days, especially serious theater. I mean, there hasn't been a serious American play that's run on Broadway for more than 10 seconds in a very long time. You can still make good money, but nothing compared to screenwriting. And like most playwrights and screenwriters, I do this for a living. And unless somebody wants to give me an immense amount of money so I don't have to worry about it anymore, it's a concern. So, you know, I'm struggling with that issue.
I can handle pressure. I am a gay man, and I am used to pressure, to trouble. I am tough and strong.
Kushner has been busy as a screenwriter, but he does have a new play premiering next spring at the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis. It's tentatively titled The Intelligent Homosexual's Guide to Capitalism and Socialism with a Key to the Scriptures. Despite the dismal state of American theater these days, Kushner says there are plenty of contemporary playwrights doing great work.
No, lots and lots of. I mean, I think we're just a huge number of really wonderful people writing. Craig Lucas, Wally Shawn, Susan Laurie Park, John Guare is still writing. He's written a great new play. David Mamet has a play coming to Broadway. Lots of young people, Christopher Shin, this new guy Adam Bach, who's got a show coming up here, you know, and on and on. I shouldn't do lists, because the minute I do lists, I leave somebody off and they're going to be mad at me. You know, so I apologize to everybody I didn't name, but I think there's no shortage of really exciting. There's this writer named Stephen Adley Gerges, who I think is just phenomenal. And, you know, and a couple of people like Craig, like Wally, like Susan Laurie, who I think are, you know, like great writers. I mean, great playwrights. So I don't think it's a problem of a shortage of playwrights. The problem is that, you know, theater costs a lot of money to do, and it doesn't work in the open marketplace, and it never has, not just in America right now, but a theater has never been a for-profit you know, when actors didn't get paid very much and stagehands got paid nothing and playwrights got all the royalties in the world, and the producers got a little bit as well, it was a model that sort of worked better than this one. You could make a fairly handsome living as a playwright because you got, you know, a giant share of the ticket sales, and actors didn't, you know, make all that much money. Now, especially with the advent of cable, when there's so much work being available to actors, you know, so much production going on, it's become even harder to keep actors in theater. You just, you know, you make $700 a week, $400, $500 a week without, you know, anything resembling decent health care. And so, of course, you're going to join SAG and go to Hollywood or stay here and try and audition for every cable, you know, thing that you can, every pilot you can get your hands on. So, you know, what theater needs is government subsidy, and everything would be fine. There should be, you know, in every city, a really handsomely subsidized municipal theater, and there should be a national theater in New York City that consists of five Broadway houses with a big budget from the federal government that, you know, makes cheap tickets, just like in London, makes cheap tickets available to huge numbers of people and pays everybody involved in it really, really, you know, decently and gives them health care. But, you know, we live in a country where we can't even get health care for children that don't have health care. So, you know, where the president vetoes the attempt to get children health care, and we don't storm the White House and burn it to the ground. So, you know, we're not a civilized country.
I wanted to ask you about your process as a writer and how you discipline yourself to arrive at the page every day, if you do arrive at the page every day.
Yeah, I can't even. That's a bad subject right now. You know, that's an ongoing, really an ongoing difficult struggle. And I don't have any magical, you know, advice to offer or anything. I mean, for me, avoiding work is an ongoing temptation. I don't think that it's because I'm lazy, although maybe I am lazy. I think it's mostly to do with the fact that I, you know, have a lot of anxieties connected to writing, and, you know, a constant fear that I'm not going to be able to find the magic solution. When you do find solutions to things as an artist, it's sometimes not at all clear where they came from and how you arrived at them. I mean, the answer, of course, is always you got them because you stayed at the desk and you kept writing, and eventually something interesting will happen. But it's very hard to remember that when you're in the throes of it, especially when you're sitting there staring at, you know, the screen or the page and there's nothing on it and nothing is in your head. There's a great impulse to say, oh my God, I'm going to fail at this, and to just go running off to do whatever it will take your mind off of it or make you, you know, not able to write for that day.
On the personal front, Kushner has been married for 4 years now to Mark Harris, a writer and the former executive editor of Entertainment Weekly. The commitment ceremony was featured in the film Wrestling with Angels, a documentary about 3 years in Kushner's life, which airs December 12th on PBS.
Very long and happy life.
Kushner says he is enjoying married life.
It's nice. I mean, you know, I like it. I don't know that it's necessarily for everybody, but I've never been somebody who is at his best alone, and Mark and I are, I think, in a lot of ways really good for one another. So I think, you know, we seem, you know, you'd have to ask him his opinion, but I'm happy, you know, it's a lot of work. Marriage is a lot of work, and it's like everything that's of any value, it's a struggle. But it's mostly, I think, a really nice, it's really nice to not be alone and to have somebody, you know, that you can rely on. And as I get older, I start to think more and more about what the years ahead are going to be like. And, you know, and that's also a feeling of security, you know, for both of us, I think. So it's good. I think I got very lucky. And, you know.
Tony Kushner, thank you.
Sure. My pleasure.
Tony Kushner is a playwright and activist best known for his Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Angels in America. For This Way Out, I'm Brian Goble in New York.
Ina, you are fabulous, each and every one. And
I bless you. More life. The great work begins.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. Special thanks to Brian Goble for his illuminating conversation with playwright, screenwriter, and activist Tony Kushner. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. You keep this program on the air and get some LGBT history, music, and culture on specially produced CDs as our thanks. U.S. donors can also deduct their contributions to the extent allowed by law on their 2007 tax returns. You can also subscribe to CD or audio cassette copies of our weekly programs at our website. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org. To order a CD copy of this week's program or sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages, email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening. On WUSB, Stony Brook, New York, KFAI, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, CJAM, Windsor, Ontario, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Don't you want me? Oh, do you really never asked you why.
Do you really want to hurt me? Do you really want to make me cry? Do you really want to hurt me? Do you really want to make me
Screamin' Party Anthems. That was Four Poofs and a Piano and a track called Extreme 80s. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Sound familiar to you? I'm not surprised. The original version of the song was called Let's Talk About Sex and was by the very successful hip-hop trio Salt and Pepper in 1991. A year later, they released a version of it with a different focus. The chorus was the same, but you may have noticed that they were now talking about AIDS. And that's what the music on this show will be talking about. This is Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and on this show, I'm showcasing songs about AIDS. And as the show will air on November 26th, it's just in time for World AIDS Day on December 1st. Approaching a subject like songs about AIDS is a little daunting, as I could easily do quite a few shows with the material I have in my collection. So narrowing them down was difficult. And also, generally on Queer Music Heritage, you can assume, unless I say so, that the artist I'm playing is GLBT. That won't be the case here, as AIDS obviously affects everyone, and artists from all over the spectrum have been moved to write about it. And I have many wonderful songs that, for language reasons, cannot be played during this show. But you can hear some of those as well in the continuation of the show, available only on my site. I'm logically starting with one of the earliest songs about AIDS. The song appeared in probably the first musical dealing with the subject, mounted by San Francisco's Theater Rhinoceros in September of 1984. It was called The AIDS Show, and contributing songs were Carl Brown and Matthew McQueen, who had already formed a group called Automatic Pilot. One of those songs was this one, Safe Living in Dangerous Times.
Many ways people die.
Safe living,
a car on the street, a fall from the sky.
Safe living.
But living in fear is no damn fun. Watching my friends die one by one.
Oh, oh, oh.
I'm no fool, I want to survive. I think it's time we opened our eyes. This could happen to you.
Safe living in dangerous times.
Doctors, lawyers, housewives too.
Safe living.
Help your lovers, help your friends. Now's the time to lend a hand. Safe living in dangerous times. Safe living in dangerous times. Safe living in desperate times.
Automatic Pilot and Safe Living in Dangerous Times. Two of my early favorite gay artists were the duo Romanowski and Phillips, and I loved how political many of their songs were. They had two excellent songs about AIDS, No False Hope and Living with AIDS, and when I interviewed them in 2003, I found it interesting that Paul Phillips singled out these two songs when I asked him of what song by them he was the most proud.
Most proud. Well, certainly No False Hope is one. I think Living with AIDS is another one. And that's because I think Living with AIDS was a song that was born out of a difficult time that didn't trivialize the time and didn't trivialize my own personal experience and wasn't written for the wrong reasons. People were asking us, why haven't you written a song about AIDS? And frankly, to write it just because it's the hot topic didn't make sense, never has, never would, to Ron and I. Again, you know, you can't force a song.
He's big and he's proud. He's abrasive and loud. He can roar like a lion. or be meek as a lamb. God knows he's courageous and sometimes outrageous. He inspires me to be all that I can. But I'll never forget the last time we met, how my heart stopped at the story he told. He said, life can be hard when it deals you a card that you never expected to hold. Then he said, it's not the end, I rely on my friends for all the affection and the love they provide. And maybe with hugs and without booze and drugs, there is still a good chance I may survive. And maybe he will, cause he's active still. He goes to the marches and all the parades. He's not giving in, he's determined to win. He's a person who's living with AIDS. Living with love, not living in fear. Embracing the light when shadows appear. It's a place to begin, it's a good way. Releasing the power we hold in our hearts. The loss of our lovers, our sisters and brothers, is a wound that cuts deep through our history of pride. One way to heal the pain we feel is stand by the living and remain unified. So if you've got a friend whose condition's grim, don't go burying him or drawing the shade. Surrender your doubt by reaching out to a person who's living with AIDS.
Living with AIDS by Romanowski and Phillips from their Emotional Roller Coaster album from 1988. And not only were we as a culture living with AIDS, we were also, in the words of Michael Callan, living in wartime.
Wartime. This is no time for doubting, to stop and wonder why. This is a time for shouting, I don't believe the lies.
Don't believe the lies.
One way or another, no one will be spared. I call out to my brothers, does not anybody care? Oh, we are living in wartime. Oh,
it's just like living in wartime.
We are living in wartime.
Wartime.
It will not
cannot go away. More die every day. This is war. This is war. Conspiracy of silence. The enemy within. Complacency or arrogance make us think we cannot win.
Make us think that the battle has been won. But the thunder in the distance says it's only just begun.
Oh,
we are living in wartime. Wartime. It's just like living in wartime. Wartime.
Oh,
we are living. We are living in wartime.
It will not go away.
Wartime.
More die every day.
Wartime.
This is war.
Wartime.
This is war.
Try
to break our spirits. They try to keep us in our place. They do it to the women and the poor of every race.
The poor of every race.
We face a common enemy, bigotry and greed. But if we fight together, we can find the strength we need.
We can find the strength we need.
We can find the strength we need.
We are living. Wartime.
Oh,
we are living. It's just like living in wartime. Wartime.
Oh,
we are living.
We are living in wartime.
Wartime.
Oh,
we are living. We are living in wartime.
Wartime. It will
wartime.
Not go away.
Wartime.
More die every day.
Wartime.
This is war. This is war.
This is war. This is war. This is war. This is war. This is war. This is war. This is war. This is war. This is war. This is war. This is war. This is war.
That was Living in Wartime from 1992. It appeared on the album The Flirtations Live Out on the Road, but was also on the 1988 solo album by Michael Callen, Purple Heart. Now, I'm not shy about saying that Michael Callen was one of my favorite gay artists. He was diagnosed with AIDS in 1982, and it's hard to believe he accomplished so much in the 11 years until his death in 1993 at age 38. He became a leading AIDS activist and was one of the founders of the People with AIDS Coalition. And through all his writing and speaking, he remained devoted to his music. He released his first album, Purple Heart, in 1988, and that same year the Flirtations were formed. The group toured nationally and released two albums and appeared in the movie Philadelphia. Now, many of you have heard him sing, but probably very few have heard him talk. I never had the pleasure of seeing him in person, but I do have a recording of a speech he made before the National Conference on AIDS in 1988. I have the whole hour speech on my site for you to hear, but I'm using just a snippet from the beginning and the end to introduce his version of the song, They Are Falling All Around Us.
I hate to read, but my brain is tired, so bear with me. As far as I can tell, I know more long-term AIDS survivors than anyone in the world. A notice I placed in the People with AIDS Coalition newsline last fall seeking long-term survivors has produced dozens of replies. Despite a persistent feeling that to talk about surviving is to jinx it, the prospect of meeting someone else who'd beat the odds apparently overcame all reluctance. If I had to describe in one word the common characteristic of the People with AIDS survivors that I interviewed, it would be grit. These people are all fighters, opinionated, incredibly knowledgeable about AIDS, stubborn, and passionately committed to living. These men and women have worked hard to stay alive. And they were all involved in the politics of AIDS, interestingly enough. some by becoming publicly identified, others by counseling and operating hotlines. Politics may well be the antidote to that self-obsession which often comes with AIDS. To realize that there's someone worse off than you whom you can help is an incredible relief and may even be healing. Yes, I have the tape with me. Actually, I think it's sitting there on top of, says Michael Cohen, I think it's queued up. Why don't we practice? People with AIDS and ARC sort of come up front here and we'll hold hands and maybe hold hands with everybody and form a circle or something. But I'd like people with AIDS and ARC who would like to publicly self-identify, join me up here.
They are falling all around me. They are falling all around me. They are falling all around me. The strongest leaves of my
tree. Every paper brings the news that
every paper brings the news that every paper brings the news that the teachers of my life death comes and rests so heavy. Death comes and rests so heavy. Your face I'll never see. I'll never see you anymore. But I'm not really gonna leave you. I'm not really gonna leave you. You're not really gonna leave me. It is your path I walk. It is your song sing. It is your load I take on. It is your air I breathe. It's the record you set that makes me go on. It's your strength that helps me stand. You're not really, you're not. I have tried to sing my song right. I have tried to sing my song right. Be sure to let me hear from
helping Michael out on that track were Holly Neer and Chris Williamson, and it comes from a wonderful album called Legacy, released after Michael's death. I consider it an essential album for any queer collection. Now, many major artists have written or performed songs about AIDS, mostly for fundraising efforts, although some of them were a little lyrically vague about the connection, like this one.
I'm a beautiful child.
I'm a beautiful child.
Let the dance all for you.
course, that was just a bit of That's What Friends Are For by Dionne Warwick, Elton John, Gladys Knight, and Stevie Wonder. It raised millions, with the proceeds going to AMFAR, the American Foundation for AIDS Research. Another successful effort was by the Red Hot organization. They released a series of compilations through the 1990s, and while most of the songs had nothing to do with AIDS, this track from their first release in 1990 was right on target.
Spreading faster than a non-complete, so I had to sit down and take time to think of how to spread the word to people all across the land, to make sure they putting out a helping hand. Nana Cherry noticed story, so it must be told, about a group of people left in the cold, caught by a plague, slowly they fade, from an immune deficiency you see called AIDS. No knowledge of the fact, kept in the dark, goes my soul and it hurts my heart. The young and elderly just running blind, hurt so bad it denied their own kind. Papa turn around and say, that ain't mine, and it just made it worse for life on the line. And it's a shame to see a little child mature, growing up knowing that there ain't no cure. I've got you under my skin. I've got you under my skin. Pure pain you're giving me. I've got you deep in the heart of me. Down so deep, you're really a part of me. I've got you. Got you. Got you under my.
Was Nina Cherry from the 1990 Benefit compilation Red Hot and Blue, a tribute to Cole Porter. On that album, artists mostly just did cover versions of Porter songs, but Cherry definitely added AIDS politics to the mix. Another 1990 release was a Benefit album with several songs lyrically focused on the subject. It was called Feeding the Flame, Songs by Men to End AIDS. And the men in question were a mix of gay and straight, mostly folk-oriented, and including a number of artists I quite like Peter Alsop. His song shows a very understanding straight viewpoint, and an educational one as well.
Dad, do you ever think about AIDS?
Sure. Come here and sit down.
I got a friend with AIDS. He's just like me and you. I got a friend with AIDS. We got a lot of living to do. Some days we get sad, so here is what we do. We play together as much as we can, and I love him a lot, cause he's my friend. Yeah, me and my friend with AIDS got a lot of living to do.
What is AIDS?
It's a virus bug.
What can you do?
Well, I give him a hug.
You hug your friend?
Sure, and he hugs me.
But aren't you scared?
Well, I used to be.
I'd be scared.
You'd learn a lot.
What would I learn?
What's safe, what's not?
Could I get AIDS?
Well, that's hard to do.
But some kids have it.
Yes, that's true.
Where's the AIDS?
It's in his blood.
What if he bleeds?
We patch him up, cause AIDS won't let his blood cells fight.
So I shouldn't touch his blood?
You got that right. I got a friend with AIDS, and someday he might die. But someday so will you, someday so will I. Some days we get sad, so here is what we do. Me and friend with AIDS got a lot of living to do. We wipe his eyes.
We touch his tears.
There's no need for fears.
But about his ears.
With a cotton swab.
You clean his ears?
No, that's his job.
What about his spit?
He swallows it.
What about his hair?
No virus there.
His breath is fine?
Smells just like mine.
Does he feel ashamed?
No, he's not to blame. I got a friend with AIDS. And someday he might die. Someday so will you, someday so will I. I'll tell you what I'm thinking of. When we're afraid we just can't love. And loving's how I want to be. So I don't let fear take over me. Here's what we can do. We can play together as much as we can and love him a lot, cause he's my friend. Yeah, me and friend with AIDS got a lot of living to do. Got a lot of living, got a lot of living, got a lot of living to do.
Peter Alsop and Got a Lot of Living to Do from Feeding the Flame. And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. And you can hear much more of my Songs About AIDS special there, totaling over 3 hours. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. Now, another fundraising event for AIDS was a tour called Heartstrings, and one of the most moving songs from that show was Jonathan Wesley Oliver Jr. It's probably the best song about the name's quilt, and while it's been recorded many times, I prefer the original by Leela Sack.
Jonathan Wesley Oliver Jr., somebody told me you would be here. Finally get to say goodbye. Jonathan Jr., how many years have gone between us? On the back porch, making wishes, counting shooting stars. I was scared of Indiana when we moved there. I was 10, and there you were with your freckled face and eye. I knew it right away. That's my friend, Jonathan Wesley Oliver Jr. Growing up must have sure been awful. All the things you couldn't say couldn't have been easy. I can still hear your dad and you fighting. Something happened, unresolved, and then you moved away. I've been married nearly 3 years. Oh, it's amazing, time goes on. Had a baby girl, her name's Jennifer. If we have a boy, he'll be John. Somebody told me you would be here. It was Jonathan Wesley Sr. Picture your father writing your name with needle and thread. Oh, you'd be laughing, you'd be proud though. It's a real nice job. I keep thinking, once you said something good can come from anything. Jonathan Wesley Oliver Jr. from 54 to 87. What's it like, John? What's in heaven? Are there shooting stars?
That track appeared on the Various Artists album Love Worth Fighting For, which I consider one of the very best GLBT compilations. Also from that album comes a beautiful song by Janice Ian. And here's some comments from her about it.
Well, I got involved in AIDS work back in 82, 83, before it had a name, and have done a lot of the first benefits, you know, the first pediatric benefit, the first one in New York, the first one in Nashville. It really disturbed me when I was writing that song how many people were using religion as an excuse for hatred and saying things like, it's God's punishment on gay men. You know, because if that was true, really, then lesbians, who are the safest risk group, really should have been punished as well. I can't imagine that God would hate gay men more than gay women. So it became an important song to me, and I like the idea that when we see angels, you know, they're always depicted as these kind of happy figures, and you put it on your lapel, and you feel a little protected. And to me, to be that close to God would mean that you really saw into the hearts of men. And I would think there'd be a lot of tears involved.
Wait, your tired arms must rest. Let this moment pass. Wait until the morning. Close your eyes and let me see who you used to be. Left without a warning. Who knew one so big could grow so small? Lighter than the writing on the wall. When angels cry, can my heart sleep? I wish I'd never heard. Wish I'd never heard. Wish I'd never heard. The power of a four-letter word. What's the difference now? Here we live with bottles and needles and truth. Here is your living proof.
that death cannot be proud. Some say it's a judgment on us all. I can't believe that God would be that small.
Ian and When Angels Cry. Another song I find quite interesting is by Gregory Gray. It's called 3 Minute Requiem and it's from his 1995 album with the amusing title Euroflake in Silver Lake.
Make
Gregory Gray. Up next, I'm going to play a tribute to a hit musical that had the theme of AIDS running all through it, and it was called Rent. But I'm adding to its title song a parody of it from the movie Team America World Police. It was from 2005, and the movie included a parody musical called Lease. Rent, lease, get it? Here goes.
How do you document real life when real life's getting more like fiction each day? Headlines, breadlines blow my mind, and now this deadline, eviction or pay. Chords sound wrong, though they once sounded right and rare. But the notes are sour, where is the power you once had to ignite the air? And we're hungry and frozen, the life that we've chosen. How are we gonna pay?
So this is the end of our story, and everyone is dead from AIDS. It took from me my best friend, my only true pal, my only bright star.
He died of AIDS.
Well, I'm gonna march on Washington, lead the fight and charge the brigades. There's a hero inside of all of us. I'll make them see everyone has AIDS. My father, AIDS. My sister, AIDS. My uncle and my cousin and her best friend.
AIDS, AIDS.
The gays and the straights and the whites and the spades. Everyone has AIDS. My grandma and my dog go blue.
AIDS, AIDS, AIDS.
The Pope has got it and so do you.
AIDS, 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 AIDS.
Call everybody, we got quilting to do.
AIDS, 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 AIDS.
We're gonna break down these barricades. Everyone has AIDS, 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 AIDS.
Everybody has AIDS from Team America. I've got time for two more songs, and again, I had such a difficult time narrowing down what I could fit into a one-hour show. There are so many aspects of the AIDS crisis I wanted to cover. The emotional areas of grief, anger, sympathy, and more political and social approaches. I didn't get a chance to include the contributions found in additional musicals, movies, or by gay and lesbian choruses. And I even have some songs with humorous angles to them. Alas, you have to go to my website for the continuation of the show for all that. I'm squeezing into this show a song I quite admire by an artist friend of mine, Jay Spears. I like that it broaches an area that is very real, but one that I had not yet heard illustrated, that of dating someone who is HIV positive.
Met a big smiley jarhead, and there wasn't much doubt. He's sizing me up, I'm checking him out. Made a date for the weekend, and I was delighted. Couldn't wait, couldn't sleep, I was too excited. So we went to the beach, and I'm thinking, doggone, we're hitting it off, it's turning me on. Then he looks me in the eye, honest as the sky, and he says, I'm an HIV positive guy. And I go, oh, ah,
positive, he says he's positive. Positive, he says he's positive.
Well, I looked out to sea, gave a little cough. It's bumming me out. It's ticking me off. Well, I felt bad, but call a spade a spade. I don't want to dodge a bullet every time I get laid. So I go, ah,
positive. He says he's positive.
a problem for you. But I was just standing there staring at my shoe. Problem? Nah, problem for me. Some of my best friends are HIV. Why couldn't I be as honest as he? Felt bad, but call a spade a spade. Don't want to dodge a bullet every time I get laid. So now we're pals, and I tell you no lie. I hope he finds a beautiful, beautiful, positive guy.
Positive, he says he's positive. Positive, he says he's positive.
Jay Spears and his song Positive from his 2002 album Boy Howdy. I'm down to the last song, but before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening. And you can hear this show anytime, along with seeing photos of the artists and recordings at www.queermusicheritage.com. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. And don't forget to come back on the fourth Monday of next month, Christmas Eve, for my Queer Christmas Show. For the last song in this show, I'm going to Dan Martin, one of the founders of the Out Music organization and whose talents I much respect. There were several songs I could have selected by him, but I picked one also found on the album Love Worth Fighting For. He wrote the song with his partner Michael Biello, and for that compilation, he got a gospel choir from Washington, D.C. to join in. They are called Lavender Light, and when I interviewed Dan in 2002, he gave me these comments about the song.
Lay Your Burden Down was written in the beginning of the AIDS crisis, at least in Michael's and my awareness. And it was really a search to express all of this pain and do it in a way that was hopeful. There was a real need from both of us to express something, create some kind of an anthem that was very positive. We were both going through various kind of emotional healing places, dealing with healing from people that we had lost and things, a time of life and a way of life that seemed to be disappearing. And at the time, we were also kind of hanging out with and listening to Lavender Light, the gay and lesbian gospel group. And I think that wanting to do something that captured the spirit that we heard from them of a gospel feeling was part of what was going on there also.
Here is Dan Martin with Lavender Light Gay and Lesbian Gospel Choir singing Lay Your Burden Down.
I have sight, I have song, I have beauty around me. That's clear. So then why would I sit and cry, waiting for the writing in the sky? We're alive when so many are gone. We've the freedom to do as we please. So then what will it take? Someone dying to believe and live the life we choose to live. Not asking why, I'm asking you, just lay your burden down.
lay it down, let it fall away. Come on and lay your burden down, lay it down, let it fall. We're in light, sound and color surround us. Friendship and love just a touch away. Still it seems colors fade to gray. Waiting for that time we call someday. Can't you see? There's so much more to share. Look around, take a stand, it's your life. Tell me why. Will it take some more dying? Let go, see the light, be the light. Stop asking why. I'm asking you, just lay your burden down. Lay it down, let it fall away. Come on and lay your burden down. Lay it down, let it fall away. There's got to be a way to push it further.
Push it further.
There's got to be a way to walk into the light. My body trembles every time I
breathe.
I can let my faith direct my life and realize I can do anything. I can build a world of plenty. Joy is mine, love is mine, wealth is here for me. My world is for freedom. The people in my life can help me there. I'm asking you, I'm asking, please, just lay your burden down, lay it down, let it fall away. Come on and your burden down, lay it down, let it fall, let it go, let it fly, lay your burden down for away.
Been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
The melodies of our movements.
I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness.
The harmonies of our histories. The political percussions and discordant descants. The sounds that changed the world.
All brought to you live here at Listener's Spot.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston.
If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.